You're now listening to The Brian Callen Show, rated the number one podcast of all time.
Of all time. Make sure you're ready, because this is the podcast where you are guaranteed to learn virtually everything. All right, everybody, you're listening to The Brian Callen Show. Today's show is brought to you by Audible. Go to audiblepodcast.com/BCS to download your free book. I have just started listening to the Graveyard book that was recommended very highly by Tim Ferriss. And apparently the language in this book is fantastic, and so far so great. It's written by Neil Gaiman. And I recommend it. And remember, go to audiblepodcast.com/BCS to get your free book today, or tomorrow, or next week, or whenever. All right, everybody, this is the Brian Callen Show, and I have the infamous, the one and only Steve-O.
Yeah, dude.
As my guest, and he was telling me that Steve-O means, I was like, what does the O stand for? He's like, nothing. No, it's just crazy.
Yeah, you know, like everything that we started talking about, it's like, oh, shit, we should save this for the podcast. Oh, man, like. So, I was in South Florida in 1996. I had picked up the moniker Steve-O from just being wasted at keg parties. And Steve-O, you know, like always doing crazy stuff. And then I heard about this radio competition. It was a talent show for this radio station. I called them up and I said, I want to be in your talent show. I am Steve-O, the alcoholic gymnast. And they're like, what does that mean?
Nobody knows.
So I was like, don't worry about it. And they had like, they arranged for me to come in and sort of audition at the radio station in this like boardroom. And I showed up and I was like, with like just, I don't know, like a six pack of beer or something. And I'm, you know, because I'm the one skill that I have that is probably like really I'm world class, probably like maybe even the best in the world.
It's awesome.
Shotgunning beers. And sadly, I can't do it anymore.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, you're sober.
But I really think, like, and I don't even say that lightly. I think that when it comes to the art of shotgunning beers, like, I might be the best in the world.
Well, you know,
like,
how long does it take you to shotgun
it's
a beer?
Just, like, it's crazy. I mean, I don't know, man.
Like 5 seconds?
No, not even two. Come on, I'm thinking if it's even 1 second.
Is that
you know?
Right? It's you can crazy. Just open your throat and it goes straight down.
Yeah, it's insane, you know? I mean, maybe it's 2 seconds. I don't know.
That's
I never
incredible.
Really timed it, but I just like, you know, I just like, I beyond inhale it. And
I beyond inhale it.
Yeah. And so I went in and I shotgunned a few beers for him, you know. I'm like doing some flips and some handstands and stuff. And I'm like, oh, this is nothing because I'm going to do like a whole 12 pack, you know,
Well, the thing is funny about you is that people do, you know, everybody has a crazy friend. And I know you've heard this a lot, but I've seen you do shit that is just jaw dropping. I mean, like just sticking, I got a healthy fear of sharks. I talk about it in my stand-ups. Uh-huh. To stick a hook in your cheek. You've talked about this stuff a thousand times.
Yeah, I mean, like, that wasn't even the gnarliest one, I don't think.
What's the scariest thing for you? I remember I asked you.
There was a time when we strapped chopped up fish all over my, like chum. I wore like a chum suit with like chopped up fish strapped all over my body and then got in the water with a great hammerhead.
That's
shark.
The craziest thing on the planet. What are you thinking
my dad asked me, he said, how can it possibly be safe to be strapped in chum and swimming with great hammerhead sharks? And I told him, Dad, come on. Like, duh. Like Manny's there, you know, Manny the shark man.
Yeah, and he's on the boat.
Well, he's got a holding a knife and he's chopping up more fish.
Oh, that's helpful. So the shark guy is actually just chumming the water. That's really
right. That's all he's there for. And it's great because, you know, the way that we always do it, you know, like we go there and we're hanging out in the boat. Manny gets in the water. He just starts hacking up fish in the water, chumming for sharks. And we're kind of just sitting on the boat waiting for him to scream shark. Where normally, like, somebody screams shark, you get out of the water.
Yeah.
Like, we're on the boat waiting to hear shark so we can jump into the water.
It's so nuts. In your mind, though, well, first of all, did he tell you that the chances of getting bit are very rare? Is there something you do?
Well, I mean, my experience is that the shark is pretty good at just taking the chum, you know?
Yeah, but you've covered yourself in,
right,
in chum.
Right. I know that
you're a piece of chum.
Right, I know. It was
you dressed up as chum. That's your costume.
I know.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I'd be like, but Steve-O, there's a disconnect. I'm not understanding how you're going to jump in the water.
I don't know. I just always have a false sense of security. I mean, I don't even know if it's false. I have a sense of security with Manny there. But yeah, so anyway, this fucking thing, you know, I get on stage, there's like 700 people in this big theater in 96. And in between each act, I'd come out like shotgun two beers, and then I'd come back out, shotgun two beers, you know. And I think I did like 9 or 10 in the show. And then I would do this this acrobatics sort of display, just shitty. Fucking,
like what would you do?
I'd like, you know, slowly press up to a handstand and then do like a fucking backflip, like back handspring, you know.
So you've
like,
done gymnastics.
I taught myself. I'm horrible at it.
But you're kind of, you're pretty athletic.
Yeah. Start blowing fireballs. But the thing was that during this show, like as I, when I kept coming out and drinking, this crowd loved it, man. I was getting drunk before their eyes. And like when I'd come back out and I'd say, I'm gonna drink more, you know, like just pounding and shotgunning these beers. And the crowd started chanting, Steve, oh, you know, and
wow.
And I mean, when I heard that, because I had just recently been in jail for, you know, I was in jail for 10 days for my second DUI. And I wrote this jailhouse memoir, right? And it's like dated March of 1996. And I wrote, you know, like, hey, you know, they call me Steve O, but I'm thinking about switching back to Steve Glover because I've kind of begun a career now, and I'm not so sure if I want to have a nickname when I'm famous.
That's crazy.
I still have
you
that.
You found
shit.
Your, you kind of found your epiphany. You found like your role.
Right, and I was, I wrote the jailhouse memoir, you know, and I still have that shit. It's so great. I'm like, when, not if I'm famous, fucking when I'm famous, you know?
When, and was, you did it though.
Right. And so I was like kind of battling it. Do I want to like be Steve-O? Do I not want to be Steve-O? You know, I don't want to switch back to Steve Glover. But when I was on that fucking stage, man, in Stuart, Florida, and they were chanting Steve-O, Steve-O, I was just like, you know, if I came out on this stage and said I was Steve, they wouldn't be chanting shit.
You're
they
right.
They wouldn't be fucking chanting shit. Steve. So you're not, no.
No, dude, Steve is not really something you can chant. Steve. Dude, Steve. Right. It's anticlimactic. Steve. But right. Steve-O. Steve-O.
Looking back on it, man, it's like, seriously, I mean, just think, I think it was just such a good call. If I had any doubts, it was silly, man, because here, like, I do dumb shit. I want to be fucking famous for being crazy. And, like, so why not have a stupid, memorable, fucking crazy name? Steve-O.
What is the craziest to you? When were you the most scared? Because I remember I asked you and you said anything that has to do with big cats and venomous snakes.
Yeah, big cats, venomous snakes, bears are pretty scary.
Yeah, well, they'll kill you in 8 seconds. That's what a grizzly bear can do. Like, you know.
But I like the fuck, you see the one documentary about the bear guy, grizzly man?
Mm-hmm. Yes, like, I did. It's the funniest documentary I've ever seen in my life.
It's really funny.
He's the craziest human being on the planet. He's like, I'm going to pet grizzly bears and live with them. Well, the Inuit guy was like, well, he's violating laws that have been around for us for like thousands of years.
Right.
You don't get that close to grizzly bears, you know? It's like you can just stand there and watch him with a timer in your hand. It's like the guy in South Africa. He lives with 38 lions.
Okay.
38.
Right.
And he wrestles with them, and then he's part of their you know, pack. I'm literally like, dude, you're food and shoes, bro. It's just a matter of time before a lion decides, you know what, I'm tired of this. I'm not, you don't have any fur.
I remember maybe the scariest moment for me, we were shooting this Nintendo commercial, pretending to be in Africa. We were on this sort of compound here in California where like they have all these lions, all these animals. It's actually called Hollywood Animals. And they set up around the tree. The shoot was, I'm sitting on the branch of this tree, and they're going to hang like some chicken from the tree branch that I was sitting on so that the lions below would see the chicken. They would be like jumping up and like swatting for the chicken, like barely missing my feet, you know, like
as they dangled off
this branch. So like,
I get nervous when you tell me, I start my body tense, shoulders crunch up.
Dude, I can show you. I can just show
my feet
you,
just came up off the stool.
Right. Oh my God. I'll show you a video of it. But I climb up the tree, right? And they have this perimeter of like electric fence around. So it's just the inside the perimeter of electric fences is the tree, me and the tree, and the lions. And the electric fences protect everybody on the set.
Yeah, on the set, not you.
Right. And so I'm up in the tree, and I'm sitting up in the tree, and I say to, I kind of sort of scream out to the set at large, like, hey, so what's to stop one of these lions from, like, climbing up the tree and, like, killing me, you know? And, like, the actual, like, animal handler, like, professional expert on the scene, he says, oh, lions don't climb trees. Right? Lions don't climb trees.
Yeah, they do. I've seen it.
And I know it sounded a little bit silly to me. And then our director, Jeff Tremaine, he says, yeah, well, that is a pretty mellow tree.
That's a pretty mellow. Yeah. I love everybody who's got an idea of what the lion's going to do. Like, they have in their mind what the lion's boundaries are, and that's exactly how people get eaten.
They say, you know, whatever, action, first take. I think it's the first take. First thing the fucking lion did was climb right up the tree, dude.
Ah, really?
Yeah.
Fuck! And what happened then?
Just climbed right up on the tree, kind of got it got right, like, on top of my back, pretty much.
It got on top of your back?
Oh, yeah. Dude,
done.
I lost fucking, like, will to live. I have it right here. This is a kind of a long...
Oh, we'll post it on the website.
A long version.
So you all of a sudden the lion's on your back, and then you just lose all will to live?
I just lost all survival instinct. I was just resigned to...
to being food.
To being dead.
And it didn't bite you because it was trying to go for the chicken?
It looked more like it was just being friendly and kind of, like, loving on me.
Wow.
But the thing was that, you know, everybody's fucking freaking out on the set. Like, oh, I gotta get the ladder. You know, they're trying to, like... By the way,
trying to wrangle a lion. You, what are you going to do? You're going to put a leash on it and pull it off? It's 350 pounds, 400 pounds.
Yeah, it's the most fucked up footage ever, dude.
Did it actually bite you, or
well,
just
it was, it was it. Right when it started to, like, it cocked its head sideways and it was going for my neck, kind of like was when they had finally got the ladder in place and brought up and lured it away with chicken. You know,
Jesus,
it looked a little bit like it was just going to bite my neck. You know,
well, yeah. Now, there are two animals, there are three animals that you probably could never fuck with that they say there's really no margin for error. One is a crocodile, the other's a polar bear, and the other's a chimpanzee, a full-grown chimp.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's actually, the list is significantly longer than that.
Oh, it is? What else?
I got any kind of big cat, any kind of fucking bear, you know?
Well, yeah, jaguars will fuck you up, apparently.
Sure, yeah, yeah. Like, all the big cats are gnarly.
Yeah, but you know, I saw so you funny? With my own eyes dressed up like a zebra.
Sure. That was another case where we said we were in...
But let me explain to these guys.
We said we were in Africa, but we were actually at that same spot, Hollywood Animals. And that lion that came and took us down in the zebra suit was the same one that climbed up the tree.
Who okayed you running through dressed like a zebra in a lion cage? Who okayed that?
Right. We brought that zebra suit to Africa, like, on genuine safari, and everybody that we worked with in Africa, they were like, yeah, no.
You can't do
fucking
that.
You can't do it. You're like, you can't even stand up, like, abruptly.
But who let you do that in the cage? You just do it?
No, they let us do it. They were okay with it. I don't know, like, how or why.
The thing literally jumped on you and pulled the suit off.
Mm-hmm. I know. Yeah.
You can't just go. Like, you can't just later, go. Uh huh. No. It's like. Yeah, I need an explanation. Right. It's fucking crazy.
When I was in the tree for the Nintendo commercial before the lion climbed up the tree, I one of the last things I was making fun of Siegfried and Roy. I was like something or other, like, you know, what's it gonna do? I was like, I don't know, like. Started cracking jokes about Siegfried and Roy.
Well, when you do with a venomous cat,
he's not quite out of the woods yet.
Yeah, exactly. He's still in there, and you're making fun of him.
He's
great.
Still
yeah,
in the woods.
That's how you sell Nintendo. Hey, how about that guy got bit in the neck? Who's in critical care? Anyway, how about that hairstyle, huh?
It's been like 10 years since then. He's still not out of the woods.
Is he really not? He's still all bunched up.
Oh, dude, he's yeah.
Well, that's the thing. If you're gonna fuck with a 600-pound cat. You know, you can tame a lion. You can't domesticate a lion.
Right.
It's a matter of
right.
time before they go, you know what? I'm done. Enough.
That's exactly
I'm,
right.
You know?
Right.
That's what they say about
it. Now I have a conscience again for making fun of Siegfried and Roy.
Oh, don't worry. You're not making fun of him. You're just, you know, you are stating an obvious fact. The fact that the guy spent his life around big cats. And guess what? When you do that, the reason we come to watch because it's very rare. And the reason it's very rare is it's against human nature to fuck with something that looks at you as food. Yet I'm in the cage. I got a great hairdo. I work out all the time. I shave my chest. Which doesn't help you when a tiger gets overwhelmed by a little something called instinct. So whenever I see that shit, I'm always like, guys, what did you expect? It's just a matter of time, you know? Yep.
So and, you know, I mean, said that correctly too, that I don't even know how much you can really tame. Maybe contain. You can train it.
Well, animals in Africa, for the most part, like, for example, a zebra, they've never been able to domesticate a zebra, ever. You can't ride a zebra. You know why? No matter what they've tried to do, they try to bring them up from babies, they will not let you get on their back. And by the way, when they bite you, a horse will bite you and let go. A zebra will bite you and hold on and shake you. All right. So that's why in Africa, there were very few, besides in the north of Africa, but for like in sub-Saharan Africa, there are no animals you can domesticate. You can tame an elephant, can't domesticate it.
Yeah.
They're not going to be your friends. They you can kind of break their spirit for a little while. And you know, you're not using them to plow a field. It's not going to happen.
Right.
So what do you think drives you? Like I know you've taken a transition now. We're going to get to that. But one of the things that's interesting to me is I'm always interested in people's motivation, you know? And you know.
Motivation's simple, man. Free money, naked chicks.
Is that I know, but there are other ways to do that. Like you work as a DJ in a fucking strip club.
I don't know, dude.
No, you need the
juice. Know, like, okay, I'm gonna get kind of heavy here for a minute, dude. You know, as humans, like you know, I see like our existence as like you know, a cruel fucking prank on us. You know, like we have one instinct, which is to survive, and one guarantee, which is we won't survive.
Yeah.
You know, the one thing that we don't want to have happen is to die, and that's all we can count on.
Right.
So it's like, what the fuck? You know, what the fuck? Like, you know, it's like we're screwed. We're in a jam, and I think that. You know, from a pretty early age, I was frustrated with that. You know, like mortality issues.
Did you experience a lot of death around you as a kid?
No, I didn't. You know, but I just kind of like I mean, I don't know how.
You couldn't put the fact that you were not going to survive into context. The fact that that your life can be just stopped short randomly.
Sure.
At a whim.
Sure, and it occurred to me because I gave it a great deal of thought. My career was really kind of deliberate in this sense. That, you know, I was like, okay, well, like, it sucks. Everybody doesn't want to die. We're all going to die. And so I feel like sort of our time here as humans is like, you know, geared, if we have a purpose, it's to sort of wrap our head around this mortality, you know. And so I recognize like three real ways of sort of dealing with it. And people refer to their testicles as family jewels, you know, they're going to reproduce. And so that when they die, they're not really dead because they have children that sort of carry on their legacy.
Your immortality.
Right. So that's a big
thing. The Greeks say that. Socrates said, man loves immortality. If you try to figure out what man loves, you're trying to define love. You said you have got to define it as love of, and Socrates said that man loves immortality. It's why he loves his children.
Right.
It's why he does things like create the Acropolis or write a script or movie, because you're leaving a mark.
Exactly. Yeah. Why the fucking cavemen drew the pictures on the wall.
Right.
You know? And so you know, there's reproducing. Then there's like religiosity, you know, where really, I mean, let's get down to it. People are afraid of dying. They want some kind of assurance that they have an afterlife, that they're going to go to heaven. And this is really why everybody's so bent out of shape on religion. You know, is because they're...
Because you're fucking with their plan.
They're afraid to die, and they want to know that everything's... They want to believe everything's going to be okay. And, you know, I was never really able to swallow any of the religion stuff. So that didn't work for me, you know, and I didn't want to have kids, you know. I can't even take care of a fucking hamster for most of my life, you know. And I really actually couldn't take care of it.
It's really interesting. It's interesting to hear you talk this way, though, because, you know, usually the answer would be, I just like the juice. I like the adrenaline.
Well, yeah, you know, and I like that, too. I like that, too. But for me, I think that... from the very first time when I started fucking around with the video camera, I was 15 years old. My dad won it in a golf tournament. He stuck me in his closet. I pulled it out. I was making skateboard videos. You know, it was cool to be able to like try the more difficult tricks that I could rarely pull off, and then be able to edit out the failures and then show people. And that
you
was
started. You started as a skater, right?
I started as a skater.
Were you
yeah.
a pro skater?
No, I mean I was all right, but I wasn't that good.
Right.
But you know, like around like when I went to college. You know,
wait a minute, we got to stop. I didn't know you went to college.
I went to the University of Miami briefly.
Awesome.
And all I really learned was that I couldn't bring myself to go to class.
That's right.
You know? And it was the University of Miami, and so I was like, instead of going to class, I'd go to the pool, and I'd jump on the diving
boards.
Best
looking women in the world, by the way.
It was pretty good.
Yeah, it was
pretty good. And, you know, I started thinking about it like there, you know, it's like, fuck, man, I'm definitely not going to pull this off. I can't go to class. I'm, you know, I'm getting kicked out of the dorms. I'm, you know, like, I'm getting kicked out, failing out, dropping out, you know, ever just fucking up every way you possibly can. And it's like, I'm looking at the world, you know, like I lack the survival skills to really make it in the world. All I really like doing is making videos. I felt like I was going to maybe like more than likely sort of die a failure, you know. And I was like, you know, I wanted to like document my life so that with the video camera. And the video camera for me was like my legacy, my afterlife. You know, I'll be dead, sure enough, like as will everybody. But in my case, I'm going to have these videos that I'm making that can live on after me. And so this was my sort of, you know, afterlife kind of
deal. That's amazing. That's your mark you were leaving.
Yeah, for sure. And it was like, and I never expected to live very long. I figured I would die young. I would die a failure. I would have, and die unknown. And I kind of set out to be the Van Gogh of the video camera, you know, thinking that I'll be discovered after I die, more than likely discovered because I died, and leave this video footage behind, and I'll have this importance.
It's fascinating because you're a complicated guy, because that's an ambitious goal, yet it must have been very freeing in a way to kind of go, well, I'm already kind of dead and a failure anyway.
Sure.
And so, you know, here it is.
And there was no backup plan, man. You know, it was, I was going to make, you know, I dropped out of the University of Miami. I was like, yeah, I'm going to be a fucking crazy stuntman guy. And people are like, you're going to be crazy for a living? I was like, yeah. And they just shake their head, man. What a tragic shame. What a loser, you know? I was so easy to pick on. Oh, man. And that was my plan, you know? And if you look at, like, the video footage, like, especially, like, the earlier stuff, all it is mostly, like, me climbing onto, like, precarious rooftops of apartment complexes and, like, throwing myself off into, like, shallow pools. Like, it was all some pretty, like, you know, death-defying looking shit. You know, I'd be dangling by my bare hands off like the railing of a 12th floor balcony, swinging out back and forth, and I'd let go and land on the 11th floor balcony.
Good God,
you
man.
Know, shit yeah. like that. And, you know, it was like, it was pretty, you know, like, I think in
But in
all,
those moments, it wasn't just about the video. It had to have been about the rush you get from
sure,
like, a feeling of accomplishment.
It was many things. It had to be. It was about the rush I got. Sure, even though I wouldn't have been doing any of that shit if it wasn't for the video camera.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it had to do with like, you know, oh man, this fucking world, you know, and I'm gonna die, like, and you know, like, I think there was like a level of frustration of the end that I was even acting out. It was like I was mad at my mortality, and so I was mocking it and challenging it, because so everything was like so much about death. I wanted to look like, fuck, look at this guy, he's gonna die, you know?
Yeah,
like,
well,
so
it sounds like you felt, the only time you felt alive, it's a little bit like, you know, for me, Tommy at the store, the comedy store one time, said, Brian, if you don't perform, you die. You know,
sure.
If I'm not performing for my friends or on stage, I just, everything seems kind of dead. And in a way, it sounds like you also have such a built-in showman inside
yeah.
of you that you kind of like, you know, you needed to kind of figure out, you were probably trying to find some kind of a stage to express your heartbreak at the fact that you were
yeah.
going to die, your
and
excitement at the world, you know, all that stuff, right?
And I think you're onto something too there, because I was mad that I didn't feel like I was going to make it in the world, kind of, you know. Mm. I was really afraid.
That's a huge thing for all young men, like for me, for sure. Like what a lot of people don't realize is that young men have an overwhelming need to feel significant and important.
Sure,
and to
man.
Feel like they have somewhere to place their energy that's going to give them things like recognition, appreciation. Human beings want to be appreciated no
sure.
matter what.
Well, I think all living creatures
yeah,
want.
No, no question. No question. All living creatures do. Your dog, whatever it might be. And you know, I don't know about lions. They just want to fucking eat you. But you know, but it's true that for sure as a human being, especially young men, man, when you're out there and you have nowhere to place your energy and a lot of time on your hands, that's when trouble happens. But you're different. You're unique in the sense that I think you were gifted with, from what I know about you and what I've seen, I feel like you were gifted with a tremendous amount of imagination and it seems to me sort of a zest for life. Like, you know, everybody who meets you and talks about you is you're like the nicest guy in the world. You're just you love people. You're very, you know, you have a big heart. You're very considerate of people. You can see that in you, you know? And I think that energy, I think part of the reason people liked watching you is, yes, you were crazy, but there's something else. Like, there's that intangible thing that some people have. And I think it might be the fact that they like you back, whether you know it or not. If somebody's an asshole, you usually don't want to watch them. I've seen a lot of actors who I know in their hearts are just kind of shitheads, kind of narcissists or whatever. They never last. The ones that I noticed, that the people, the personalities I noticed that last, that kind of have longevity, are the people that seem to kind of like their audience back. They're doing it for more than status and more than, you know, hey, look at me. They're doing it kind of.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm being a little too.
I'd take it all. Like, you know, I love all the praise and the compliments, man. It's cool. Mm. And thank you. I think that, you know, I think what maybe makes people root for me and the guys I've worked with is, you know, we're really just making sacrifices to you know, really kind of improve people's days, you know, because yeah. if you take this thing where like, oh, we're in a jam, you know, most people don't enjoy their fucking day. Most people think their day sucks.
Right.
You
exactly.
know? Most people.
It's a Thoreau thing that most men are living lives of quiet desperation. I read that and I never forgot. I was like, that's never going to be me.
Dude, most people do not fucking do what they love for a living. Right. Most people do not fucking like their wife.
That's right. They don't like coming home. That's exactly right.
Most people are not stoked that they had fucking kids.
Yep.
I mean, whatever. Maybe.
It's true. Maybe. Most people, if you gave most people a portal to jump through to another life.
Right.
They do it. They leave their kids and their wife and everything.
And you know? I don't know how accurate we really are there, but I think that on some level, I think a lot of people live in frustration and discomfort.
I mean, don't you think that's a lot of what drugs and booze are and why they're so popular in this country? People want to get out of the state they're in because sobriety is hard to even face.
Sure.
Right?
And I think that you know, escapism, man, If people have problems that are weighing them down, you know, that's why they go to the comedy club. That's why they go to, you know, it doesn't matter what the fucking, what type of entertainment it is. The idea is that we are, and I think this is a very noble fucking thing in life, you know, a title that I, you know, kind of made up, but I love it. And I call myself a professional distraction therapist.
That's great. A professional distraction.
I'm a distraction therapist.
I love that idea. Professional distraction. I like that just as a company name. Professional distraction.
Well, yeah, just distraction. It's distraction therapy. You know, most I recognize people don't like their day, and so it's like, dude, I'm gonna fucking just go buck wild because when you see me doing, you know, whatever dumb shit I've come up with to do, the idea is that whatever problem you have, is not bothering you.
Yeah.
You know, I've essentially distracted you from your problems, your issues, and by doing that, I've made them go away, man, you know?
Yeah.
I've made, like...
Well, it's all energy, it seems to me. Like, you know, you can... You know, somebody one time said to me, you know, an acting teacher said, you know, he was like, what's wrong? I'm just tired. He goes, well, tired is just an energy. You can use fatigue, you know. Just be tired on fucking stage. Let's see what this scene looks
people
like
people
when
always
you're tired.
Say don't do that. Never yawn as part of a show.
Maybe it works. Maybe, I mean, I remember when I watched Nick Swartzen a long time ago, get him to stand up. Nobody knew who he was, and he kept apologizing. My uncle and I were laughing so fucking hard. It was in New York. He kept going, sorry, I'm just tired. I ate so much turkey, and I got all this. I think this tryptophan's running through my system. And he'd do a joke, and nobody would kind of laugh. Me and my uncle were dying, and he'd go, it must be this turkey. And he was genuinely really tired. Funniest thing I've seen like ever. I was fucking dying. But how did you mean? I was gonna move on to. I'm gonna do a movie with Johnny Knoxville in the summer.
Okay.
And how'd you meet Johnny?
I heard it was there was a skateboard magazine that that was really created for no purpose other than to be a forum for filth and naughtiness that wouldn't ever be allowed.
Do you think that he is a clinical masochist? It seems to me like he genuinely likes the pain. We would have
conversations every once in a while, you know, like where I'd say, dude, you know, like I would be like, dude, we're going to die, man. Like, I want to live forever, dude. And that's what I'm going to, you know, I would have this conversation with a lot of people. I remember one time, like back when I was in Ringling Brothers Barnum and Bailey Clown College and we shared the clowns.
I didn't know you went to clown college.
And we shared the clowns shared this apartment complex with these marine biology students for the summer. And I was talking to one night, I was drunk talking to this marine biologist chick. And I was like, you don't understand. I was like, we're going to fucking die. Like, but I am going to live forever. I'm going to fucking do all these crazy stunts, all these videos. And so after I die, I'll still be able to distract people from their problems. I'll still be able to entertain them, to inspire them. And I'll be alive, man. You know, that's what the fucking videos do, man.
They're going
to
keep me alive.
No. She looked at me and she shook her head. She goes, you are such a fucking arrogant prick. She goes, you think it's all about you. You think it's all about you. And she'd say, you know, I've devoted my life to marine biology. You know, like if I do my job, my passion, if I do what I feel I'm here to do, and then after I die, if a fucking manatee comes up and feeds on a living coral reef, then I'm alive too. You know, like
that is her legacy.
Yeah,
it's the same thing.
She's like, right. She's like, You're not so fucking important. It's whatever you do, you know. If you make a difference, if you help, if you,
that's
you
right.
know,
she's right. And
she
she's
is right.
right.
She is right. She put me right in my place.
That's a fucking mature point of view. That's right. Boring. Right. I don't want to stop all your layers of maturity, man. Just let me fucking talk about my videos and eating shit.
Right, you know? Right. And you know, and so she put me in my place. And I think it's appropriate to bring that up. But I'd have the same conversations with Knoxville, and I'd be like, dude, you know, to live forever, man. That's what I'm doing this for. Like, I'm fucking gonna be important. Knoxville's like, dude, you know, like that's cool. You know, that's cool, but I just you know, I just think it's a pretty easy job. It's like I just kind of like having my butt kissed and not have to really do any kind of real work.
For him to say that, it's not an easy job, dude. Smoking a cigarette, blindfolding yourself
right,
when they
true.
Release bulls is the craziest shit
I wouldn't fuck with that.
Are you kidding? Really?
I feel,
a stampede of fucking bulls. It's the scariest thing on the planet. He's got to, when he strapped himself to that rocket, and I think you turned the camera, somebody goes, he's a gnarly fuck. He is the gnarliest human being
he's
on the planet.
He's pretty much gnarly. He's pretty gnarly, yeah. I don't know. I know. I think that, well, I know that when we would have these conversations, Knox would say, I'm really not terribly worried about what happens after I die, but he's definitely concerned with...
His life now. Yeah.
And he wants to have lots of free money.
Yeah, I understand. You know, it's funny how...
And it's like you said. It's like what everybody wants. You know, they want to be appreciated. They want to be acknowledged. But
it's also funny that when you find out the motivation, like a lot of your heroes, like the Beatles, I think it was Paul McCartney was saying, you know, a lot of people were saying that we were just doing it for the music. It was complete shit. Me and John Lennon, you sit down and go, hey, let's write a swimming pool right now. In other words, we're going to write a fucking song. We're going to be able to buy a swimming pool off the proceeds of this song. That's why we're doing it. A huge part of like the motivation, it doesn't have to be glamorous. Sometimes you just want a bigger fucking house in a nicer neighborhood with clean sheets and a maid. There's nothing wrong with that, man. It's called creature comforts.
Right.
You know?
Because well, there is something wrong. There is something wrong with it. Like fundamentally flawed and humans will be extinct before long as a result.
Well, that's the funny thing is I was training in jiu-jitsu with this guy who was teaching me these Greco-Roman techniques, and then what I realized was that I'm what am I doing? I'm rolling around on the ground to practice choking or breaking somebody's arm. Meanwhile, if you take a small knife, my buddy who's a knife expert, he goes, dude, I got a 4-inch knife. I could scribe your spine from the front. You got 8 inches. He showed me how. He goes, if I just unzipped you, if I just cut you like lengthwise, I'd cut your aorta. You'd be dead in about 3 minutes. I mean, 3 seconds. And I was like, oh, geez, talk about vulnerable. I'm a fucking balloon in a world of pins. And so, you know, as a human being, you can try to build armor. You can box. You can learn how to shoot a gun. And you can do all this stuff. And the bottom line is, it's fucking, we are vulnerable, flesh and bone, creatures that are definitely going to die and can die very quickly and very easily.
Sure.
You know, I was talking to this Delta Force guy.
And so it's interesting when I say humans are going to be extinct, and then you, like that, your association with that is your vulnerability to a 4-inch blade. where I'm thinking that
you're on a deeper level. Go on.
You know, I'm just saying that you know, like humans and our we're the only living creature that actually will hoard and keep away from its peers more than it actually needs.
Right.
You know, and so you've got the creature comforts, you got the guy in the Bel Air mansion, and then you've got like the rest of the world starving and can't feed themselves,
that's right.
You know?
That's
and like
right.
And it's this
that is a it, human by the way, that is a human compulsion.
We're the only living thing.
Safety. Right? We can't get enough safety.
Taking more than we need. Right. And as a result of that flawed fucking, you know.
Well, it ensures our survival. It ensures the survival of our progeny. The anthropologists always talk about the inherent motivations behind those kinds of things. When someone trespasses on your property, what they're really trying to do is stamp out your DNA in your mind. They're trying to kill you and your, you know, what you, you know. Mm-hmm. So there's this idea of like it elicits a very angry, aggressive response, you know. That's what's always kind of fascinating to me, you know, about not only motivation, but what human beings are doing is pushing way beyond their biology. So we may be extinct, but what's going to happen is we're going to mesh with machines. We're going to mesh with machines that are not as sensitive to their depleting environment. We're going to have synthetic DNA and synthetic biology components and biocompatible nanotechnology and robotics that basically fit into our bodies, that assimilate themselves, and we're going to be able to have, you know, we're not going to need as much oxygen in a room. It's not going to have to be as clean and all that
stuff.
That's literally where we're headed.
Okay.
It's called Homo Evolutus. If you want to hear a great lecture, go to TED.com and watch Juan Enriquez under the, it says Mind-Boggling Science.
Yeah.
He just talks about how not only are we growing body parts, but we're also creating artificial eyes that can see a mile away, or ears, or red blood cells, nanobots the size of red blood cells. You can shoot them into your body and they'll oxygenate your blood so that you can hold your breath underwater for an hour or sprint on one breath. You know, all kinds of weird shit. That's probably 40 years from now, but that's where we're moving.
That's crazy, man.
Yeah.
So last night I was at this thing, right? This sort of a function.
Yeah.
And somebody asked me, you know, if I could go to another function and you know, like give a talk, you know? So, yeah, you know, it was this chick, you know? And so she gave me her, she's like, okay, you know, like I looked at my calendar when I'm available. Yeah, I can do it then. She said, okay, so I'll give you my number. And so close to the time, you know, we'll confirm this date. And so like, okay. And so I said, yeah, send me a text. Yeah. I said, and I probably won't even send you a dick pic.
Cause I'm mature now.
Right.
I'm mature now. I'm not going to send.
No, it's just so fucking funny to me because like, it was a serious environment that we're in, you know, it's a serious environment.
Yeah.
And it's a serious thing that we're talking about. And here I say, you know, I probably won't even send you a dick pic. The look on the look of horror on this girl's face. She was like, it was just the this intense, like, just awkward discomfort horror.
Yeah, but then you've got fuck and shit tattooed to your knuckles,
right.
So she doesn't know what she's getting into.
Right.
But that brings me to a really interesting question. Now you've stopped dressing up like a zebra, and putting a fish hook in your mouth, and jumping in the shark infested waters, all that stuff. And so,
I still, you know, I still got a ton of crazy left in me. So
I bet you do. But
you're surprised if
well,
I
you're
can.
Doing stand up now,
sure,
and your show's amazing. I hear. Well, where are you going to be, by the way? Let's plug some dates.
I've got Vegas with Tom Green. We're doing a double headliner show.
That's a good time.
At the Riviera Casino in Las Vegas, March 14th through the 17th.
I like it. March 14th through the 17th. By the way, at the same time, if you're not in Vegas, and I recommend going to Vegas and seeing those guys because Tom Green's hilarious. Rogan was raving about Tom Green's...
He's good.
Yeah, stand-up, which is so good. He's such a good guy. So you're going to be there March 14th, 15th, 16th, 17th.
Right.
And I will be in Marco Island, Florida.
Oh, I was just there.
Were you?
I was, yeah, Captain Ryan's.
Yeah, off the hook comedy, baby.
Yeah, Captain Brian, I was there Oh shit! I guess 3 weeks ago now.
It's a good. It's a good time.
It's a really good time, man.
Fish and giggles. Eat your fish and get some giggles, everybody. Yeah, fish and giggles. Fish and giggles.
Yeah, I had a great time there, man. And they have a. I was actually staying right off the road. It's called Bald Eagle.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, Bald Eagle Drive, I think.
Nice.
And I was so happy to get out of.
Where'd you stay? What hotel?
The old Marco Island Inn and Suites.
Okay, was it good?
Great.
I might stay at the Marriott there. I'm not sure.
I think you're going to want to go with the full penthouse suite at the old Marco Inn.
Was that in on Marco Island?
It is, yeah.
All right, I'm going to stay there.
It's great. And then, and you'll be right off Bald Eagle Drive. And if you catch yourself a fresh shave, you know, downstairs, then you can do what I did and get out of the car by the sign that says Bald Eagle, you know, and fucking pull down your pants.
Oh, so you're shaving downstairs, shaving your product, your three-piece set.
Right.
You keep it smooth? You're nice and
I like to, yeah.
Good man. No hair at all?
No hair at all.
Jesus, it's impressive.
And then, oh my God, I love this so much because...
you got a picture of it? Yeah. A picture of his genitals.
It says, the caption is, it's not just a road, it's a way of life.
Fucking A. Yeah. What are those tattoos? Give me the tattoos on.
They're all pretty they're all simply designed to be stupid.
You look like a crazy motherfucker right there. That's a great pick.
Well, thanks,
but
man.
But now you're doing stand up. Are you getting the kind of juice and the rush from stand up that
sure.
you did? And do you feel you'll ever go back to going doing crazy shit? Jackass 3?
Yeah. I'll always be down to do crazy shit, man. You know,
You do stunts on your set?
I still do some stunts at the end of my show. Yeah, for sure, man. I would feel like I was betraying my brand if I just stood there and talked the whole time.
Yeah,
you know?
I remember. But, I remember when you were squeezing. I don't know if I can say it, you're squeezing lemon in your eyes. And,
I go,
why don't you just fake it? And you go, it's not my style, bro. Yeah, you were literally trying to run. You were like rinsing your eyes out backstage, like fuck.
I'm not really into faking anything.
It's not a magic trick. It's the real fucking deal.
Sure, man. Well, yeah, you know, I can't be faking shit.
You were talking on stage one time where your dick is crooked or something?
Yeah.
Was that from an accident? No.
It's from being right fucking handed. I really think, I guess the way I jack off, I yank my dick.
You yank to the right?
Yeah, well, I'm just like, I'm sure that's what it is.
I jerk off straight down. Straight down with fury.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think, you know, you watch pornos, you see the guys that have corkscrew dicks? You know, they're like the weird cork. They're really aggressively.
I take it you know a lot of porn stars just because of your.
I don't know a lot of porn stars, but I certainly have my favorites.
Who are your favorites?
Well, Tori Black has to be the fucking most gorgeous girl ever. Right. God, she's so fucking pretty.
I look for attitude. I don't look for pretty. I like Belladonna.
Yeah?
Belladonna just seems like she genuinely likes sex.
Okay. Caden Cross, God, that girl's gorgeous.
Yeah. What's her name? Jade Black. Jaden what?
Yeah, but I'm just kind of dropping like the biggest names in porn almost. Yeah. But they deserve to be the biggest names. They're fucking that good, you know.
Yeah, well that's a whole different thing. I did a podcast with Alana Evans, who's been doing porn for 15 years. It's remarkable how in a lot of ways normal she is. Like, it's just a weird thing, you know. You talk to her and it's like
they just had this what do you call it, a fucking documentary called Life After Porn.
Yeah.
And I'm so mad at those people, man. They were really onto something. They could have had that fucking documentary be so great, you know, like Life After Porn and how, like, you know, depressing it is, you know, like a cautionary tale, you know, here's like, look at this and like, you know, like what happens. And then, you know, after, you know, the premise right there is so great.
Yeah.
But, fuck, man, I couldn't make it through the first 10 minutes of that. I was like, wow, like 10 minutes I've been watching this shit. They have yet to fucking show me one fucking thing I care about. They just blew it. They blew it. They had such a great idea.
That is a great idea, actually. I wonder what life after porn is, though. I wonder if a lot of people just go on with their life. You can kind of do porn nowadays and be anonymous and just go on and do something else.
Man, you know, the first weekend that Tom Green and I did... the first weekend that we did our headliner show at the Riviera Casino just happened to be the same weekend as the AVN Awards in Vegas. Uh-huh. So after our show one night, we went over to the Hard Rock Casino where all the porn people were. And, you know, Ron Jeremy, you know, he called me up.
I think I was with you in Vegas at the MMA Awards, and we were standing in a circle with Ron Jeremy. I think so.
The MMA Awards.
Yeah,
yeah. Were there.
And he was there
and
with
that girl, Brittany Palmer.
I presented an award.
With Brittany.
She's a sweetie.
Palmer.
I know Brittany. Brittany's pretty cool.
She was on the fucking cover of Playboy magazine. Bless her heart.
I know. She's a good
what
girl
a
too.
Fucking gorgeous baby she is.
And she's cool. Like I like Brittany. I like Brittany.
For sure.
But Tequila was there with Ron Jeremy.
Right. Jerry Rice.
Yeah. It was an interesting experience.
Yeah. So we go over to the Hard Rock Casino, right? We're going to meet Ron Jeremy in this suite upstairs. There's this fucking crazy party going on. There's like torture racks, it seems like, with dudes getting whipped on it. It was like Boogie Nights of the fucking millennium, you know?
Right, it was like
a Boogie Nights party, 2000s.
Right.
And fuck, man. So I get to talking to this one chick, you know, and she's like a beautiful chick, you know, I don't know her, I'm not even going to say her name, but she's like a beautiful chick. Everybody's just getting all fucked up, and it's just a gnar. I'm like, what am I doing here? I'm a sober guy. There's fucking cocaine everywhere,
really? Blow around porn stars? That's crazy talk.
I remember like waiting for the bathroom, and I'm talking to this chick and someone else. I go, man, I feel like we're waiting for a fucking cocaine party to wind down in this goddamn bathroom while we're waiting to use the bathroom.
Which is what you're doing.
And the girl, she says, oh yeah, there's a lot. just say the word. There's a lot. Like, I'm good. But anyway, so I get the sense I'm talking to this beautiful blonde girl, and that she's like not like that. You know, she's not wasted. I'm like, I don't do fucking drugs. You know, I'm thinking like, oh, I'm like kind of into this chick.
Yeah, careful. This is how you get married to a porn star. Can't do it.
And so I'm talking to her, you know, and we're really getting along. But of course, now it's like almost fucking 4 a.m. I'm so tired. Got to get out of here. But I exchange numbers with her, and I think to myself, man, when I get back to my hotel, I am gonna fucking jack myself silly after I Googled this chick. I was just
damn right.
And I get back and I go on to like Pornhub.com.
And you got a kind of a crush on her. She seems like a wholesome girl. She's different than the others.
I go back and I plug her name into Pornhub.com and like there's nary a clip other than like, you know, it says her name and like and it's just like just taking gigantic black cock in the ass every time. It's like her specialty, you know? Just
her specialty. That's my kind of girl. You know? My kind of girl. Now when you fuck her, it feels like she's getting poked as opposed to punched.
You know, it's just like, and I mean, I've always said, at the risk of sounding gay, I have to have cock in my porn. You know,
I do too. Cause I'm not in the girl. Cause I actually have to feel like I'm, you know,
frame of reference. I have a joke that I do when in my stand up. I say, you know, the girl on girl porn is a waste of time. If you think about it, lesbian porno is like a skateboard video with nothing but ramps and nobody riding them. You know,
that's fucking great. That's a great metaphor.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it is.
And so now when I say I need cock in my porn, I do. And I don't like the fucking cock to be too big because I can't relate to that, you know? Talk to other people like my buddy Psycho Mike from Loveline. He's like, no, dude, I want to see the I want to see the biggest cock possible. He says, I'm not going home to fucking turn on the TV and watch high school basketball.
I want to see excess. Because for me, porn has kind of like run its gamut, man. It's hard for me to get all. I need context now. I used to just be straight up just visual. Now I need.
But the thing is,
I'm becoming
dude,
like a chick. I need.
But the guys
context.
Having the guys in pornos have such fucking big dicks that the girl's mouth can't reach the part of the dick I want to see her lick. That's my fucking problem.
This is when you know you become a connoisseur. By the way,
when she's fucking. Just she can't fucking fit her mouth around the head of the fucking cock.
That's
and she
problem.
Can't fucking like it's just it doesn't look like yeah.
pleasure. It's a stunt. It becomes
yeah.
a stunt.
It's you know like so I like a smaller dick in my porn so that like just so that the mouth can reach the part I want to see get licked, you know. And it's you know I want like and so dick that's too big and you know like and
but so you go back.
I can't watch like a huge black cock porn because like that the to me it's like really evident that that's
Well, like, well, the first time I saw Lexington Steel's dick, like, I was like, it's like 15 inches. I was like, that thing is a fucking club. That's the crazy. Right. That, I have a philosophy on that. I think, like, men, a lot of times, like, when a lot of women will say, well, if I date black guys, a lot of white guys won't date me. And it's not prejudice. It's right. not prejudice. I think what it is a lot of guys have this idea, well, he's black, so he must have a huge dick. And then what they think is, I think men are territorial. The reason men go to the moon and climb fucking Mount Everest and have to build a taller building than the next guy is because we want to be someplace somebody else hasn't. And if somebody's got a 15-inch dick and he's been way up there and you've only been 6 inches, 8 inches, whatever it is, up that road, and he's been 7 inches farther, fuck that. He's got a flag planted right. back there where I can't reach. Right. He's been further down the road. I'll find another road to fucking travel. That's why I tell girls all the time, if the guy's got a little dick but you like him, act like you can barely take it. I don't give a shit if it's a mushroom cap. Make those fake noises.
Acorn.
Right, because we want. I always say men want to be lied to. We don't want the truth to be. If you start fucking, if the guy starts fucking you and you start laughing, you know he's gonna break up with you.
Yeah, I had this one girl that we'd be having sex. She'd be screaming her head off, almost like to the point where it was disturbing.
Oh Jesus! You know, I've had that. Like, that's really, my joke. When I had a girl, dated a girl who sounded like she was falling out of a building. Like, I was like, my neighbors were like, "What the fuck are you doing?" Like, literally, they came running over, thinking there was a murder.
So this girl, she'd scream her fucking head off, and I wasn't even asking any questions. I was just fucking loving it. You know, I was just
makes
fucking,
you feel like a hero.
She fucking going, but then. And I remember, too, it just so fucking happened that we were at a bar with, like, all of my fucking jackass bros there. I forget what the fucking occasion was or if it was an occasion, but just happened to be there. And we're fucking sitting there, and it's kind of cool. But like, I was the only one who thought this girl was hot, but I thought she was fucking really hot, okay? I thought she was really hot. Nobody else did. But so we're sitting there, and I'm like, yeah, you know, so, and I said something along the lines of, you know, we have pretty incredible sex, huh? We have, like, just going ahead and reaching over and patting myself on the back.
Hell yeah.
Telling her, so you and me, you know, we really have.
Because you sound like you're dying when we have sex, so obviously it's got to be pretty good.
You and me, we have really pretty fucking incredible sex, huh, don't we? She looks at me like I'm some kind of fucking asshole and says, I've never had an orgasm in my life. I've never had it.
Oh, my God.
Dude, it's like the fucking blood fucking just left like my face. Wow. You know, like
a lot of women, by the way, have that issue. A lot of women go their whole life without actually having an orgasm, but they feel weird about it. They don't want the man to feel bad, so they'll create a whole bunch of noise. That's why, guess what, I fucking always assume that's the case.
I got up and I forget what it was. Maybe I was so fucking mad. I just like I went over and I said something to Knoxville. I said, do me a favor and fuck that girl I'm walking out on right now or something, you know?
Well, the thing is, did you ask her why she screams and goes crazy?
I wasn't fucking trying to interview her at that point.
Your ego was destroyed.
I had no questions. I left. I went and said something particularly mean-spirited about her to Knoxville, and then I fucking left.
Did Knoxville oblige?
No.
What are the kind of women you usually date? Would you have a type if you ever get married?
If I was gonna, like, a vegan, sober, fucking surfer that's hot, really hot.
I like that.
Yeah.
Are you a vegan?
I'm a vegan.
How long have you been a vegan?
3.5 years.
Damn.
Even though I can't say I'm 100% vegan.
Yeah, I was gonna say.
Because I still eat a ton of pussy.
And bacon.
I added, I don't eat a ton of pussy. But,
listen, you know, why not? There's nothing wrong with that. Don't apologize for that.
Well, I don't rule it out. I started eating clams too. Because the people define vegan as nothing with a face.
Yeah,
nothing from anything with a face.
Sure.
Clams don't have a face. Clams, well, some...
Yeah, some do.
I eat clams.
Some bearded clam does.
So I added clams and mussels to my diet.
Somebody asked me to come up with all the different... That's good. So you're eating mollusks. Mollusk. You're a fucking mollusk vegan.
Right. But they don't have a face. They don't have a brain. They don't have a fucking central nervous system. Farming them isn't devastating to the environment. The fucking contaminants are very low. It qualifies as a superfood.
There you go. Oh, does it? I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Yeah, fucking like more potassium than like anything, man. And bananas for potassium, not even top 10 on the list.
Really?
More iron than beef. I've got all the omegas. You got, oh, it's great, man.
You can eat almost everything from the sea. Almost everything that comes out of the sea you can eat. Seaweed.
Yeah, if you want to go to hell.
Yeah, if you want to go to hell. If you want to go to animal hell, vegan hell, come back as a fucking fish.
Because the Bible says that eating shellfish is an abomination.
Well, that all comes, though, from... That's actually the Old Testament. And that comes from probably the fact that it's the same thing as when you didn't eat pig and stuff like that. A lot of that comes from the fact that those animals carried pathogens like trichinosis and stuff that if it wasn't cooked well, you would get severely ill. The reason you don't eat animals that eat other animal flesh like bear meat or osprey like birds of prey is because what they do is animals like that will tend to eat rotting flesh. They'll find an animal and eat it. And what happens is they get like bear meat, for example, gets different like pathogens like parasites that live in its muscle that will transfer to your body and fuck you up. Not just trichinosis, there's another thing. The same thing with any animal of prey. That's kind of the reason you shouldn't eat other animal. Yeah, you don't eat animals that eat animal flesh. You should eat animals that eat grass and you know, grains and stuff.
Or you could just go ahead and not eat animal flesh.
Well, this is true. This is very true, my friend. This is very true. However, I just went hunting with Joe Rogan and we shot a goddamn deer. I've never done it.
I got more respect for that.
Well, you know what? You know what was interesting about that? Is that I've always been pretty, I've read up a lot about farming practices. I don't like eating mass-produced animals. Sure. I don't even like the milk from cows.
Well, you know what? My heart goes out to dairy cows more than any other.
Yeah, because they live in their own shit. They live in these terrible feedlots. Yeah, I've seen it. I've smelled it.
And cows are supposed to live a good 20 years. A milking cow, like, barely make it past 3.
Because their life
is that fucking terrible that they actually die.
I believe it. It's not a way for an animal to live.
They don't run longer than the length of their own body because they're in this fucking pen filled with their own shit. Drinking that milk can't be good for
you. It's not good for you. On top of the fact that they feed them corn, they're ruminants. They're supposed to eat grass. They're not supposed to eat corn. And what happens is when they eat corn, their liver's abscessed. That's why you have to give them antibiotics so they don't. It goes on the list. Right. Michael Pollan has written a lot of this stuff. Michael Pollan
said... And then the shit's so fucking messed up that by the time you actually have the meat, then you have to douse it in ammonia.
Well, the reason that I always try to eat from family farms and stuff like that and sustainable agriculture, whether it's...
Because you're a fucking... A great outdoorsman, fucking macho man with an axe.
And I'm going to show you what I look like with my shirt off in a little bit because I haven't shaved now. And I want you to see my hairy torso. But the point is that, yeah, you got to be aware of where your food comes from. And Michael Pollan says you can vote 3 times a day by what you put on your plate.
Exactly. That's what they say at the end of that Food Inc. documentary.
Our health fucking care costs would go so far, way down if people actually investigated how to eat. Stop eating sugar. Stop drinking soda. Stop doing
those kinds of things. I haven't had a soda or a cup of coffee in almost 3 years.
Coffee's fine, you know, if it's done in moderation. Soda and high fructose corn syrup and sugars like that, that are supported by government subsidies, by huge factory farms. This is not good for the environment, and it sure as hell ain't good for your body.
Right.
It's so not
you,
the fat,
when's
it's
the
sugar.
You had soda?
I haven't. I never drink soda. I probably 10, 15 years.
Wow, okay.
I'm coming up on 3 years. I actually think Coca-Cola is, and there's a great lecture to watch, it's an hour and a half, but Dr. Robert Lustig, who's a professor of endocrinology and pediatrics at Cornell University, gave this incredible fucking speech about how what he calls it, the Coca-Cola conspiracy. And I'm not a cynic about these things, but you know that he just talks about his thesis is high fructose corn syrup that you're feeding your children in all its forms, corn refining, you know, when they create is poisonous for your body and for children. There's a reason obesity levels and people have metabolic syndrome and things like that. You can trace it. And it's bad for us. The food we're putting in our body is fucking, that's what's poisoning us, not terrorism, not all the other things that we think we're worried about. It's the food we put in our body, and we can change a lot.
When I was a kid, my dad was a CEO for Pepsi Cola.
Oh, no shit!
Yeah.
He was the CEO?
Well, he was a
high-ranking executive.
Yeah, I mean, I was born in England. When I was 6 months old, my family moved to Brazil. My dad was the president of Pepsi-Cola Brazil.
Wow.
And and then when I was two, we moved to Venezuela. He was promoted to, like, I don't know, Central America and South or something like that.
Yeah.
We moved to Connecticut when I was four. When I was 6 years old, we moved to Miami. Dad was the CEO for R.J. Reynolds Tobacco.
Big
tobacco.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. And then...
But, you know, your dad, at the same time, that's not somebody I criticize. Let me tell you why. Your father is providing a service where there is a demand. I'm a capitalist, and I believe in markets.
Yeah, okay.
What I believe in, though, is that I think that as a consumer...
Right.
As a consumer, you've got to educate yourself as to what you're putting in your body.
Sure.
I think people should have the right to smoke. I happen to believe drugs should be legal. I don't believe in enforcement. I believe in personal responsibility. That's the way I look at things, and I can argue that.
I think that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. But go on. That's very interesting.
So dad, and this was in the 80s when dad was I think he was the CEO of R.J. Reynolds Tobacco for South America, and we were living in Miami. But then, it was in the 80s, right around that time when they figured out that cigarettes were bad for you. And so the tobacco companies started buying up food companies. And so R.J. Reynolds Tobacco merged with Nabisco and became RJR Nabisco.
Yep.
And then my dad became a CEO for Nabisco. Amazing. So it's pretty rad if you look at it, you know, like soda, cigarettes, and cookies.
Amazing.
You know.
Yeah, good
it's
for
like
you!
My, it's like my fucking three food groups, man.
All poisonous. All poisonous.
Yeah.
Well, you know, a good book to read is the China Study. He believes in veganism. I'm not actually a huge fan of veganism. I think for the most part your diet should be plant-based, but I have a different point of view on that. But that's not important. What is great
mollusks.
About the book?
How about vegan plus mollusks?
Fuck yeah, that's good for you. A little mollusk action, and that's a perfect superfood, according to Steve-O.
I don't know about perfect, but I think it's certainly, you know.
Yeah, you get everything you need. But in the China Study, he breaks down how big industry has basically hijacked the way we eat. It's worth reading. I always recommend it. It's called the China Study.
Well, sure. I mean, I'm for like that kind of information, you know, like I'll go to the documentary like Forks.
Well, Forks Over Knives is where it comes from. That's where the
documentary comes from. It's the doctor. Oh, man, I can't remember.
Campbell. Colin C. Campbell, yeah.
Yeah. I went to the premiere for that movie, and then I was so psyched on it. I bought 100 DVDs and gave them out to my friends.
Oh, that's awesome.
Kind of stupid because it's on Netflix.
Yeah, but yeah, I know. Hey, dude, thanks for the DVD. That's the thing about being a stand-up comic now. I'm going to shoot my next 1 hour, and then, am I going to do a DVD deal? I don't need it, man. But you could just download it on, you know, should I do it on Amazon or Netflix? Are you going to do a half hour or an hour anytime?
Maybe I will, man.
Yeah. I mean, you're working toward it, right?
Sure. Thing is, I'm wondering. I don't know what I'm doing because, all these bits I used to do, and how it is when you're a stand-up. You know, you discard old shit and you bring in new shit. You know, like you would think that. I was thinking that the old stuff, because there's nothing wrong with it. I just don't do it anymore. The old stuff, I would be putting it into a bin to do and do a special with it or something, you know.
Sure.
And that's how you should retire material if you're a stand-up.
That's what I do. It's hard though, you know, because I had to let go of all my old stuff that was so. And sometimes I'm on the road and people shout out like the greatest.
Do you do the leg
things.
On the stool bit?
I don't do
anymore?
Any of it. I had to get it all. I had to get rid of all of it because I'm working on a whole new hour. But when I'm on stage, a lot of people are like, dude, do the butter bath, do the punching of the cow in the face, or do that. They want to see those things, you know?
The Led Zeppelin song where you're...
Yeah, when I'm fucking chopping heads off. I had so much fun with that. People would go fucking crazy.
Yeah.
I was in Miami. I did a show, I remember one time.
At the Coconut Grove Improv?
No, yeah, that and at the one at Fort Lauderdale.
Hollywood Improv. I saw that. I called you from there when I saw...
Yeah, that's right. You texted me. That's right. Dude, I did an hour and a half with my old material, I remember one time. And I remember when I got off stage, I texted my mother and I said, I just want you to know that I have done everything that I ever imagined possible as a stand-up comic. Like, I've never had a show like that. I've never had that reaction. I had to literally stop and let them calm down. That feeling of... And then so when you have that, and you've done that, and you have to throw it all away, when you got to let it go, those wonderful memories of all those fucking bits, and you got to just say, more, and do all new shit.
But then I'm with you. I get it. But at the same time, I think it's a lot more torturous to be... stuck and fucking, dude, am I still doing this?
Fuck yeah, man. You got to keep evolving. Joe Rogan and I talk about this all the time. Because you got to keep reinventing yourself.
I have bits that I'm still doing that where I just want to fucking kill myself.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what happens. And that's for me. I have such a, I can't keep doing the same shit. I got to keep keep revisiting your set. Part of what I love about writing stand-up and stuff and just stand-up is that it becomes more than just about getting to be funny. What you start doing is distilling who you really are. You get to who you really are. In like, I don't know, when I write now, I actually think of topics like, what am I the most afraid of? What am I the most proud of? Who do I want to be versus who I am? I just come up with questions. And then the funny finds itself. Actually, if I find myself doing a trick where it's going to be funny, I can't do it because a little part of me dies. I'm like, I don't want to. I feel like I'm lying to the audience.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah. People don't like being lied to.
No, man. You know, you can get away with being a hack and being funny just for the sake of funny, but I'm more interested in kind of being honest.
I've always said that the comedy is reliant upon the truth. That's when jokes are funny, is when there's when it's truthful.
Well, I saw you in the beginning. You did shit in the beginning. That was so. That's what I was so impressed with is. You come from this, you're doing this crazy shit, but to get up on stage, and what you did was, you weren't even sure where you were going, but you would tell stories and they were honest. Wow. I mean, they were fucking so honest.
I was saying before about the dick kissing one, you know, I mean, whatever, it was a stunt, you know. Yeah. I was on a fucking bus in Russia, you know, I'm in Russia, and I was like, you know, and I fucking, my buddies were all filming, everybody was giggling, and it was my stunt. I kissed Chris Pontius on the dick. and when I told this story in the stand-up, you know, like half the room at least just went fucking cold. I was just felt divided. I was like, fuck, man. Like, I started doubting myself. You were there. I told the story about the time I got my dick sucked by a transvestite, and the same thing happened, maybe even got even a little worse. And then I came off the stage and I told you, I was like, yo, Brian, dude, I don't really fucking know about this fucking shit. I think I'm never gonna tell that fucking tranny blowjob story or the fucking dick kissing. And you were like, you just like, you got all serious, man. You said, look, you looked at me, you were like, you're, you know, basically bite your tongue, man. He says, dude, the reason why people like you, Steve-O, is because you don't fucking give a shit, because you'll do that because you're fucking
exactly.
You're open like that. You're
right.
Fucking.
You're truly like, honest and raw. So fuck people who.
Yeah.
No, if you have 20%, 30% are offended, you're doing your job.
That's why people like you, is because you're not afraid. Everyone's so afraid of what everybody thinks and don't fucking like own it. Be who you
that's
are
exactly
and don't
right.
be afraid. You know.
I'm glad you remember that, because that's exactly what I. That's what makes you actually so endearing. What's interesting about the
put
truth,
it all out there.
Fuck yeah, the truth. See, remember this: when you're vulnerable and you're really telling the truth, it's impossible not to love somebody. It's just that even if you're like, I mean, my God, even if think about it, somebody's a serial killer, and they go like this, and they go, and they're like, I'm just, I can't not kill people. Right. I need to go to jail, but I can't not kill people. You know what we do? We watch with fascination. Rather than go, I hate him, we go, oh, he's sick. Oh, he's got a problem. But at least even in that extreme case, we go, oh, well, the guy's got a screw loose. Got to just put him away somewhere.
Right.
You know, I don't want to torture him to death.
Right.
If he's like a guy who gets off on it. You know, so if when you're honest about anything in your life, you know, fucking, if you're honest about you what's really going on inside, because most people are saying one thing and feeling something very different, and their whole life is based around a lie. That's exhausting.
Do you think that in scandals, you know, like where Hugh Grant, he's got Liz Hurley as his chick, but then he's with this Destiny Washington or whatever.
Every guy understands that. You just wanted something. You wanted something fucking strange. You're not, it's the old thing. Hottest girl in the world. There's somebody tired of fucking her, and that was Hugh Grant with Elizabeth Hurley, and he wanted Divine Brown or whatever the fuck.
He wanted something dirty and strange.
Right, I get
Brown,
it. Yeah, we all fucking get that shit. And I hate guys who don't. And guys are like, oh, that's bullshit. Go fuck yourself. Then you're not my group. You're not hanging out with me. If you can't understand that human beings are flawed, crazy, and inexplicable, because I do shit that's inexplicable to me. I am driven by my instinct and my impulses. I try to have self-control.
You're not married?
I am married with two kids.
Wow.
So I got to be careful. You know, now it's like a different kind of thing. But
that's a shitty time to ask that question.
Fuck, I know. It doesn't mean I'm not honest. It doesn't
mean that
shit isn't fucking hard all the time in one way or another.
Uh-huh.
But I got to set a good example for my daughter, because I don't want her dating a guy like me.
Right.
You know what I mean?
You don't get nobody in your group.
Right. No, fuck no. I can't set any. This is a true story. I can't set any of my good friends up with like nice girls.
Right.
My good friends.
Right.
Like Dov Davidoff, who I love like a brother. He's right. not dating any of my fucking friends, and I love right. him. You know, I mean,
that's
you,
true.
Most of my friends are stand-up comics or fighters or fucking retards. I mean, right. you know, what am I going to do? So, but I'd rather that. I like flavor and color, you know, and honesty. That to me is what the way I want to live my life. I don't think you can live your life otherwise if you're a performer or an artist or whatever you want to call it. Or, I'm sorry, let me use your expression, a professional distraction slash therapist.
Well, yeah, not even slash. Just distraction therapy is the art.
That's fucking great. Professional. Your company should be professional.
I don't even think you even have to say professional. Just distraction therapist.
I want that. I wish I thought of that. I would have t-shirts made that say professional distraction.
Yeah, okay.
Do you have t-shirts?
Maybe yeah. I do, man. Just little Steve-O t-shirts, man.
I need some t-shirts. I don't know what that.
Dude, I'll tell you, man. I was on tour for just about 2 years before I started selling shit.
I'm terrible with that stuff. I got to start doing it. Do you sell DVDs or anything?
No,
or
no DVDs. Just but I sell books. I'm a New York Times best-selling author. And
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
What's totally. Your book called?
It's called Professional Idiot, a memoir.
Dude, I'll put it on my website. Professional idiot.
If you just put a link to my website, I got all my shit on my website. All
right, good.
Yeah, dude, it's great, man. Like, I wrote a very unflattering book about myself with help of not a ghostwriter, because his name's right on the cover, too.
Right.
But, you know, the average customer rating for my book on Amazon is a full 5 out of 5 stars average.
Wow.
So I'm really fucking psyched.
Wow.
So yeah, it's an unflattering fucking juicy ass read. You
unflattering,
know?
I'd call it honest.
Sure,
I'd call it just honest.
It is, man. It is.
And, you're impossible. I told you this before. You're impossible not to like, and that comes from the fact that you're willing to be unflattering.
You know what you said about the serial killer guy, man. That's a fucking big deal, dude. You know,
it is. It's true.
It's a major. Point.
Even somebody that extreme, when they go, "I'm a fuck up. I can't. I have a compulsion I can't control." We all go, "Oh fuck. Oh, if you put it in that term, and you're being that honest. Oh, okay. I get it." Ted Bundy would talk about, he said, you know, sometimes I see a girl and I just want to be nice to her, and then another side of me wants to see what her head looks like on a stick. And he goes, and that just...
But did he ever come clean about everything?
I think, like, just... He was a total psychopath. I mean, these people are fucking sociopaths. But, I mean, he was... Part of what made Bundy so fascinating to people was there was a large part of him that was very honest about his compulsion. He would say it had a tremendous amount of remorse, and then it would come back even stronger. And we all go, well, that sounds like a fucking addiction, that we all have had an addiction of some kind. Your addiction just happens to be that you like to kill people, which is, well, you got to go away. You got to die because we can't have you.
Right.
Don't breed. We don't need those genes in the tree. But as human beings, we're fucking fast. We're drawn.
Well, yeah, they made fucking serial killer trading cards.
Exactly. Women a lot of times can be really fascinated with
baseball cards, but for serial killers.
Yeah.
Hilarious.
Yeah.
With stats.
Because we like the dark side. Because we all own some of the dark side. We all have a nun and a killer and a priest in us. Or, you know, we all have all of it. You know, human beings are,
yeah,
you know,
dude.
The good side hopefully wins out, you know, for most of us. But, you know, some people are...
It's an interesting fucking world, man.
What's next now? What do you see yourself in 10 years, man?
I don't know, man. You know, I got I've got my silly TV show on True TV.
Oh, you do? What is it? I do a show on True TV.
It's called Killer Karaoke, and it's people singing karaoke while horrible shit happens to them, and I'm the host, which is pretty cool for me, you know, like, because I'm just like the comedian host guy, you know, and there's all this crazy shit going on, but I'm just like the host.
Did you come up with this idea?
I didn't. No, it was one of these shows that originated in England.
Oh wow!
And so yeah, that's kind of a cool deal. We're getting ready to shoot a second season of that.
Are you pretty famous in places like England and Australia?
Yeah, I do. I have a profile there. Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember, like, you know, it's pretty wild because with the Wild Boys show that we did, like, traveled all over the world. I remember we were filming with an indigenous tribe in Borneo.
I've been to Borneo. Were you with the Dayaks?
The Dayak Longhouse, where they make you drink alcohol the whole time. Uh-huh. They get you just fucking shit-faced.
I drank that rice wine. I danced with all the shamans, man, all night.
And you're disrespectful to them if you turn down another shot of them.
Dude, I was drinking out of a communal cup. My sister was like, I'm not drinking out of that cup. I go, give me the fucking cup. It was like milky rice wine.
Dayaks. Yeah, I remember the Dayak, and they take you in their Dayak Longhouse, and they just get you shit-faced.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah, we did that. And it was crazy because, yeah, you know, here we're with this fucking, it was another indigenous tribe. And, you know, the guy points at my tattoo in my arm and he's like, Afrod tattoo. You know, like,
for, what
I was like, dude, the tattoo I got while off-roading in a
off-road tattoo.
Off-road tattoo. The guy was recognizing me from a Jackass movie.
Wow. Like,
oh, you know, it's pretty wild, man. Like,
well, that's what's happening with the internet.
It's a globalization. Totally. Of you know.
You know, you all of a sudden you're famous in China or something, you know?
Right. Like, I know. I think they've seen
I was in Thailand and I got recognized from, you know, the first Hangover. It was the craziest thing. Right. I was getting my feet.
You were in the second one too,
yeah,
or no?
Yeah.
Because I didn't see the second one.
Yeah, I played the owner of the strip club. And I was supposed to do the third one, but I ended up doing this movie called Ride Along with Kevin Hart.
Congratulations on how fucking well things are going for
you. It's good, bro. But I'm back to square one, you know, as an actor, and now I'm looking for another job. It just always.
Every job's your last.
Every fucking job's your last.
I was talking about how, like, you know, I felt like the video fucking camera. This is a really pretty ironic thing because I felt like with the video camera, I would have this legacy, this immortality, and that it would just never die. And the footage was immortal. The video was immortal.
Yeah.
But then that was way before. Like, then all of a sudden I show up, you know, we got Jackass comes out on MTV. And then all of a sudden I realize, wait a second. It's not fucking immortal. Footage comes with a goddamn expiration date. You know, I remember moving out to LA and everyone's like, oh, hurry up and strike while the iron's hot because, you know, your show's going to get canceled. You're going to be a hazard.
That's right, dude. That's it.
It's like everything that was supposed to be fucking immortal is now expired.
Right. It's like old cell phone. Like, show me something new.
Right. And then it's like, the whole like quest for immortality just turns into this fucking ridiculous frantic scramble like a dog chasing its tail where every job is your last.
That's right. That's exactly right. And all you want is out of that circle.
I know. And fuck, man, it really is. It's a depressing world that we live in.
Well, the problem is that a guy like you and me, you know, I don't think I can do anything besides this. Like, this is it for me. I gotta fucking try to figure out a way to make people laugh and be entertaining.
Yeah.
Which is a great job, but you know.
You know, in so many respects, and I'm just grateful that I crashed and burned the way that I did, so that I would be forced to reinvent myself in a way that I allotted. You know, I give myself. I mean, I'm sure you've got separation between your career and your personal life. I never had that, man. You know, I never had that. I was just Steve. I had to check this out. You know, like around the clock.
Yeah.
And then I crash and burn. Now, like. I'm able to exist as an entity other than Steve-O.
Well, what happened? That was there a one seminal event that got you to get sober? Did you decide?
It was a whole slippery slope, yeah. And I went way past the point of needing to get better before I did.
Did your dad was a very successful corporate guy. You obviously grew up with some money and stuff.
Sure.
And then he had this insane son.
Right.
Did that create? Because I know with me, I had a similar dad, and it caused a lot of tension. I didn't, you know, but now, of course, we get along really well. But it was hard for him because he was just like this fucking kid, man. I'm giving him everything, and he's a fucking idiot. Like,
well,
I was just, you know,
it was like, you know, when obviously I dropped out of college. You know, like I didn't even talk to my dad for like 6 months or something because I was like,
sure,
I was, you know. I was embarrassed, kind of. I was ashamed. I felt like I'd let him down.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and I, you know, he had this, dad did instill in me like a sense of pride, you know? Yeah. And like when I dropped out of the University of Miami, I'm going to be this crazy stuntman. Like I'm driving, you know, like just going around the country. Like I had the government testing drugs on me for money. It was this crazy medical study where they're testing drugs for pigs and cows on me. And my family didn't even know where I was.
Wait, I didn't know about that.
There's this drug called ractopamine hydrochloride. And when you get involved in like the medical study sort of scene where they pay you to be a professional lab rat.
Yeah.
Like then as it goes, the more dangerous the study that you participate in, the larger the amount of compensation you're going to get. Like they can't introduce anything into the, you know, the public realm that's going to come in contact with the human body without first doing tests on it. So a toothpaste, you know, they have to perform medical studies.
So what is this drug called?
It was called ractopamine hydrochloride. And the idea of it was that they would administer it to pigs and cows, and the end result, it would work sort of opposite as steroids do, but the end result would be that the pigs and cows would have less muscle and more, sorry, less fat and more muscle.
Oh, okay. Oh, more muscle.
Yeah, wait, to,
oh, so
to,
more meat.
To appeal to a more health conscious consumer. Okay. Granted, this was in 1994 that I did it. But
so it was kind of a steroid you were taking.
Sort of, but it worked the opposite way somehow. And so it would, the end result would be there'd be leaner meat for the health conscious consumer. They could see on the package, like, oh, this has like no fat. So it'd be like, oh, let me buy this. But by the virtue of the people eating that meat after the it's been treated, you know, the with the drug, then that means that the drug will be entering the human body when the people eat the meat.
Sure.
So first, what they have to do before they can legalize this drug is they have to like find out how much the human body can withstand of this drug, you know?
And you decide, so I dropped out of college, I'm going to fucking be a volunteer.
Well, yeah, but like I need some money, man, you know? And I think it's kind of a cool deal. I'm going to go fucking have drugs tested on me by the government for money. And, you know, and this drug for pigs and cows. And so
did you answer an ad for this or?
It wasn't an ad as much, but there was like I don't know, my buddy actually found
it. Okay, so go on.
There was like a number that you call and you get like some kind of a directory of studies. Right. And you know, it was for $2,000, man. $2,000. And I was homeless anyway. So I mean, fucking, once I got in there, it was 12 days, roof over my head, they're feeding me. You know, I had a fucking place to live for free. And I got 3 meals a day. And then I walked out of there with $2,000.
Did
you know?
Your dad just not give you any money? Did
he
just
well, no, it wasn't that. I never asked for money. You know, I mean, I had more pride than to, and I didn't expect dad to pay for me to be a piece of shit.
Right,
you know?
Right, to be a fuck up.
So I don't know. Like, I just, I had, even though when I ran out of that $2,000, I did, you know, I remember like sort of hooking up with dad, you know, talking to him and saying, you know, dad, everything's going really great, doing good, but it would be easier if I decided to talk to me to get my dad and my stepmom to get me a used car.
Okay.
So it was just a fucking crazy, dumb
Your dad
idea.
Sounds like a great guy and a very patient guy. He's got to be proud of you now, right?
Right. Oh, for sure. You know, and I got that car and then I followed the Grateful Dead all over the country, you know.
Wait, do you have any sisters or brothers?
I have an older sister. She's a high school teacher.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, so, you know, this whole, like, I'm going to be a crazy stuntman, it wasn't really working. And then when I got into to clown college in 1997, which was a big deal, Ringling Brothers Barnum.
My cousin went there, yeah.
Oh, yeah? What year was
I
that?
I think it was the Ringling Brothers. It was probably around that time.
Right, well, yeah, they shut it down after my class.
Okay, so. His name was Donato Vigiano.
I don't know. Yeah. That doesn't really
I don't know help. How long Donato but, went there, but if you're listening.
But then when I went to clown college, even still, dad was not fucking feeling that. Dad was conspicuously missing from my graduation gala.
My son's fucking a fucking clown.
Right.
A professional.
My mom came. And we know when I was in fucking clown college, my mom, my mom's sister, right, like my cousin, was in mortician school. So my mom and her sister are sitting there arguing over whose son's a bigger loser, right? You know, my mom's like, oh, my son's a fucking clown. Her sister's like, yeah, my son's like learning how to embalm dead bodies.
What do they teach you in fucking clown college?
It was just like, we had classes all day, you know, makeup, acrobatics, skills, still walking, dance,
how long
improv.
Is the college?
It was just one summer. It was more like boot camp than
amazing,
you know. But dad didn't come. But then, like about a year after clown college, I still had. I didn't even get the fucking contract to the circus. We were like competing for like 10. I split my head open like in the first week, and I had to be hospitalized. They're like, "What the fuck is this guy doing? Like, he's not a clown. He wants to be a stuntman." That's why I went to clown college, was to further my goal of becoming a stuntman. I figured if people see that I'm a trained circus professional Ringling Brothers guy, they're gonna take me more seriously when I'm drinking bong water and fucking lighting myself on fire at backyard keg parties for sure.
Exactly. Exactly.
And so but dad, you know, in 1998, I still hadn't made a dime. I had a $2,000 fucking clown costume hanging in my closet in Albuquerque. I'm selling pot to pay rent, you know, doing fucking stupid stunts that nobody cares about.
A weed selling clown.
Even though I was hooked up with that skateboard magazine that Knoxville was, and you know, which turned into Jackass. I didn't know it would turn, but I was working with the same people on like or collaborating on this magazine and this video stuff, contributing like my little stunts.
Oh wow! So you guys started submitting. Yeah. Videos to the magazine.
It was a skateboard magazine. Okay. And then the guy in charge of the skateboard magazine, he said, you know, hey, everybody loves these videos that we're making to Spike Jonze. He said, everybody loves our videos, but nobody really cares about the skateboarding. So I think if we subtract the skateboarding from our videos, what would be left over would make a great TV show.
Yeah.
That's what happened. So I was working with those guys, but you know, I was getting photos in the magazine here and there, you know, I was videoing some stuff. Nobody was paying me shit. And dad said to me, he said, you know, when we met up, he said, son, I feel I've done a disservice to you by not supporting you in this career path that you've clearly committed yourself to. And gave me the spiel. He said, my dad had the same conversation. You haven't chosen like a profession that I, you know,
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah.
But you're obviously so committed to it that I, you know, I pledge my support. And,
that's great, man.
And so it was great because it was pre any kind of success. You know, it wasn't.
Yeah. My father did the same thing with me. It's kind of, we have parallel upbringings that way. My father, when he found out I wanted to be an actor, he just couldn't. He was just like, dude, I'm going to have to support this kid the rest of my fucking life. I remember seeing his face. But he said, I'll pay your rent. He said, I'll support you while you're trying to go to acting school.
Right.
Because I was temping or some shit, you know, just doing like shitty jobs. And I could have done it, but he was like, I don't want you to make ends meet the way I had to, because that sucked and it was a distraction. If you really want to do this. And I never forgot that. It was great. Yeah. You know, he had the wisdom to realize that he was making money so that his son didn't have to do shitty stuff that was distracting from what he really wanted to do. So, but that's not an excuse to not follow your dream, even if you have to fucking work. I mean, I was going to be an actor no matter what, you know, or I was going to do whatever this is. I would have found my way through.
Sure.
I always say that to people, you know, when I get a lot of emails and stuff and people say, I should always give my email actually. It's me@briancallen.com. But when people, I get a lot of questions like, you know, I want to follow my dream, but there are no excuses, man. If you really want something, I'm sorry, but, you know, you're going to pay for it if you don't do it. Way worse than if you do it. Sure. I know it's scary. I know you're not sure what to do. It's like you're a classic example of that. You were kind of, it was like a free fall in the direction of, you were just doing what you wanted to do.
There's this song, oh man, I get goosebumps even thinking about it. Fucking on the Cirque du Soleil soundtrack from the Key Dom show, and it's called Let Me Fall.
Wow.
And it says, let me fall, let me fall. There's a moment when fear and dreams must collide.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great thing, man. I love those sayings. Like that music and mythology is so important to spur you on and to create inspiration. You know, it's like you have to jump. So another thing, you have to jump in the, sometimes you have to just take a leap into the abyss just to see if you can sprout wings. What time is it, man? We've been talking.
We've been going for a long time.
All right. We gotta end this. That's a perfect way to end.
Yeah,
Steve-O, awesome.
Yeah. Let Me Fall is that song. It's a really fruity sounding song, the way they're like all mellow and stuff. Fuck, I love it, man. That's like an anthem for my life.
Let Me Fall.
Let me climb. There's a moment when fear and dreams must collide. I'm waiting for, I'm going to become, let me fall. I'm going to become the person who will catch me.
Wow, I like that. I'm going to become the person that'll catch me. I'm going to go listen to that song and have a
fantasy. It needs to be remade into like a heavy metal song too, but whatever.
I was going
to
say, man, I know. It needs like a Zeppelin remake.
Yeah, totally.
Steve-O, ladies and gentlemen, on the Brian Callen Show. Thanks, guys, for listening. And this was awesome, dude. You're awesome.
I enjoyed it.
God,
you're
always just so fun.
You've been listening to The Brian Callen Show. Be sure to visit briancallen.com for information about this episode as well as past and future episodes. You can follow Brian on Twitter @BrianCallen and like him on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/BrianCallenComedy. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next time.